holding scientific research and discovery in respect as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And here we are on a beautiful day. August 23rd, 2019, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. Did you know that America is rapidly turning into a police state? It's not too obvious to many people because life kind of continues on the way it has for many years. But across the nation, police departments are implementing facial recognition technology that is literally turning communities into a police state where everybody can be monitored, basically like China. China now has 500 million facial recognition cameras installed in its country, all connected back to a central point where facial recognition software can be applied to the images. America's headed in that direction. And unless citizens stand up and say, nope, we're not going that way, it's going to go that way. So this first article, pretty serious stuff, has to do with Detroit. Detroit, of course, is a community in America that has a very large black population. And so when Detroit Police Department creates Project Greenlight to install facial recognition cameras widely across the city, a dispute arises. Questions arise over privacy, over false targeting, over racial profiling. My comments here, high-tech facial recognition systems are fostering a total surveillance police state across America, and citizens may not have much time left to declare it un-American, unconstitutional, and a violation of their civil rights. This article states, when the Detroit Police Department proposed a network of high-definition surveillance cameras that would stream live video from gas stations, liquor stores, and other all-night businesses to a central police command center, Nasser Bedoun was one of the first to sign up. In early 2016, the owner of a Marathon gas station on the city's west side enthusiastically paid $6,000 to install cameras around his station and connect them with the crime-fighting effort called Project Greenlight. Since then, he said, crime at the gas station has fallen and revenue has climbed. He said, we don't have the trouble that we used to have. There's an element that used to come to the station to cause problems that no longer shows up. So in his case, having these cameras installed kept a few bad elements away, and subsequently, crime went down. The article continues, but now, as those Project Greenlight cameras have expanded to 578 locations across the city, Bedoun is among the Detroiters grappling with the news that police can zero in on anyone who is filmed, including customers who are simply pumping gas, and collect personal information about them. Detroit police officials say they're only using facial recognition technology to identify suspects in violent crimes, not to spy on ordinary citizens. But in a city that is about 80% black, with a sizable population of Middle Eastern, Asian, and Latin American immigrants, critics have blasted the police for using technology that has been shown to be more likely to misidentify people with dark skin without fully explaining it to the public. Willie Burton, an elected member of Detroit's Board of Police Commissioners, said, "What happens when this software misidentifies one single person that doesn't have the resources for a good legal defense? Detroit is the poorest, blackest city in America. It should be the last city where we're implementing facial recognition." The debate over facial recognition in Detroit has grown so heated that Burton was dragged out of a recent police commissioner's board meeting in handcuffs and charged with disorderly conduct after the board's chairwoman complained that he was interrupting the meeting. The charge was later dropped. Remember that Burton was an elected member of Detroit's Board of Police Commissioners. That's a civilian body that oversees the police department. He was arrested for being disorderly and complaining about facial recognition. Well, the charge was later dropped. The Oversight Board, along with Michigan State Legislature and Detroit City Council, are all weighing proposals to restrict or ban the police use of facial recognition. The Oversight Board's vote could come in the next few weeks. The debate has put Detroit at the center of an escalating national conversation about high-tech crime-fighting tools that are promoted as beneficial to the public but may lead to more intrusive forms of government surveillance. Facial recognition is a policing tool that was uncontroversial 2 years ago, but is now so contentious that several cities, including San Francisco, have preemptively banned its use by police. And Senator Bernie Sanders, a Democrat presidential candidate, recently called for a national ban. In Detroit, though, police have been using the technology for more than 2 years. That, combined with the city's high crime rate, its demographics, and its expanded network of Project Greenlight cameras, has made the discussion here remarkably combative and closely watched across the country. And yes, it should be closely watched across the country because facial recognition technology cannot end well for our country and our Constitution. Americans are protected by the Constitution, by the Bill of Rights, against irregular or illegal search and seizure of their property, including their data. The police departments or any other entity in society have no business randomly photographing and identifying people and collecting information on them for no good reason. This is a total invasion of privacy, and it does indeed need to be banned, and it would be good if it was banned nationwide. The next story is absolutely a horror. And the title to this is indeed CRISPR horror. You remember CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R. That's the new DNA editing tool that can modify DNA strands. In this case, scientists intend to edit human sperm. Let that sink in. They're seeking to edit now human sperm that would give inheritable DNA to the offspring of people born with the edited DNA. Technocrat purist Gianpiero Palermo, the scientist who is behind this latest effort, he says this: if we can wipe out a particular gene, it would be incredible. Theoretically, in principle, this would be a major, major benefit to society. This is an absolutely incredible statement. To wipe out a particular gene, just delete it. He says it would be incredible, and it would be a major, major benefit to society. He doesn't explain how, but he's playing with fire. And he's playing God, too. The article starts, first it was human embryos. Now scientists are trying to develop another way to modify human DNA that can be passed on to future generations. This story was generated by NPR. Reproductive biologists at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York City are attempting to use the powerful gene editing technique called CRISPR to alter genes in human sperm. NPR got exclusive access to watch the controversial experiments underway. The research is aimed at finding new ways to prevent disorders caused by genetic mutations that are passed down from men, including some forms of male infertility. The team is starting with a gene that can increase the risk for breast, ovarian, prostate, and other cancers. The experiments are just starting and have not yet been successful. But the research raises many of the same hopes and fears as editing the DNA of human embryos. Nevertheless, the researchers defend the work. During a recent trip to Palermo's andrology laboratory at Weill Cornell Center for Reproductive Medicine, NPR witnessed an experiment attempting to edit a single gene in sperm. Palermo said, "If we can wipe out a particular gene, it would be incredible. Theoretically, in principle, this would be a major, major benefit to society." Other scientists who are not involved in the research agree. One of the main goals is to try to understand and possibly prevent male infertility caused by genetic mutations. Male infertility is a very common condition, says Kyle Orwig, a professor at the Department of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Sciences at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. And there are some diseases that are incredibly devastating to families. And for those diseases, for me, If you could get rid of it, why wouldn't you get rid of it? But others are saying editing DNA in sperm raises the same troubling questions as editing DNA in embryos. Would it ever be safe to make babies that way? Would it open the door to someone someday trying to make designer babies? Should scientists be trying to tinker with the human gene pool in ways that could affect generations to come? It doesn't matter whether you're manipulating the embryo or you're manipulating the sperm, says Francois Baylis, a bioethicist at Dalhousie University in Canada, who is advising the World Health Organization about gene editing. Well, he's absolutely right. Those who want to change and manipulate the human genome are absolutely out of their mind, and they're out of touch with reality. This type of technocrat thinking needs to be resisted at every single level. And scientists like Gianpiero Palermo need to be rebuked for what they're doing. Leave it alone and don't play God. It cannot possibly end well because you are not God. And in any case, you simply don't understand the complexity of human DNA and the other unintended effects that it might have, either in first generations or generations way down the line. Our next story concerns our neighbor to the south, Brazil. Brazil is the largest country in South America, contains some 60% of the Amazon rainforest, is home to some of the largest cities in the world, including São Paulo, and now the world apparently has turned on Brazil to be harshly critical of the fires that are burning in the Amazon forest right now. I wrote an article on this because there appears to be a massive disinformation campaign launched against Brazil and its leader, its right-wing leader, and it seems to be orchestrated and playing to the G7 conference that's taking place right now, where world leaders are discussing various issues. This is one that the United Nations wants to push to the forefront. So I wrote this article, and I stated, seemingly everybody has heard about the fires burning in the Amazon, creating smoke and haze events in cities as far away as São Paulo. The question is, who is spreading the alarm, and is it real or fake? The hysteria over Brazil's lungs of the earth has even become a central contention at the G7 meeting in Europe, with global leaders calling for intervention to save the Amazon jungle. The problem is that most pictures being circulated on social media are not of this year's fires at all. Photos are being dragged out from fires dating back to 1989 and presented as if they were taken in 2019. This is fake news and blatant disinformation at its worst. But the world's news media is using it to fan the fires of outrage in an attempt to achieve a political outcome, namely sustainable development. In particular, the Amazon rainforest is seen as vital to countering global warming. Meteorologist Eric Holthaus, who writes for the radical environmental journal Grist, tweeted today, quote, "Smoke from the fires currently burning in the Amazon rainforest is covering about half of Brazil. We are in a climate emergency," close quote. Well, apparently, fire and smoke is seen as proof of global warming. That sure doesn't pass the logic test in my book. However, considering that the rainforest stretches across Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, Colombia, Venezuela, Guyana, Suriname, and French Guiana, why is it that only Brazil is under attack by the sustainable development mob? Well, first, remember that the first Earth Summit that produced Agenda 21 as sustainable development in the first place was held in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. Thus, Brazil is akin to sacred ground to United Nations policy wonks. Second, Brazil's newly elected president, Jair Bolsonaro, is strongly opposed to globalization, left-wing policies, and is pointedly anti-communist. Bolsonaro has become a lightning rod for attack much in the same way and for the same reasons as U.S. President Donald Trump has been demonized ever since he took office. The bottom line is that while fires are real, the Chicken Little panic is fake. The article included at the bottom of this now is titled Amazon Fires, How Celebrities Are Spreading Disinformation. And I'll read you the first couple of paragraphs on this. Many high-profile figures seeking to denounce the fires in the Amazon, from Madonna and Cristiano Ronaldo to Leonardo DiCaprio and Emmanuel Macron, have unwittingly ended up misleading millions on social media, either sharing photographs of the region that are years old or images taken in other parts of the world. Official figures show nearly 73,000 forest fires were recorded in Brazil in the first 8 months of this year, the highest number for any year since 2013, and most were in the Amazon. So leaders are saying across the world things like, our house is on fire. Literally, the Amazon, the lung of our planet, which produces 20% of our oxygen, is burning. That's what Emmanuel Macron said, president of France. He posted a photograph of a burning forest accompanied by a hashtag, Act for the Amazon. It is an international crisis. Members of the G7, let's talk in 2 days about this emergency, Macron said, ahead of a planned summit this weekend. But the photograph used by the French leader does not show this year's fires. A reverse image search, we can do that now, by the way, a reverse image search showed that it was taken by the American photojournalist Lauren McIntyre, known for his work for National Geographic. Although the image search tool does not reveal when exactly the photograph was taken, McIntyre died in 2003, meaning the image is at least 16 years old. There's a link going to the image to show you what it is. Chile's president, Sebastian Piñera, also ended up tweeting a misleading image to issue a warning about the fires using a photograph by Reuters journalist Nacho Dose from 2013. And the list goes on, with the fake photographs being promoted as taken in 2019 to decry the vast damage that's going on in the Amazon. Well, guys, collectively, you all fail, and we will not buy your fake news or blatant disinformation. While Facebook and Twitter are busy trying to determine what fake news is, offering censorship to many conservative groups around the country and around the world, they nevertheless have no problem allowing this kind of garbage to enter into the mainstream of news, and it's blatantly and obviously fake. There was an article written back on August 5 of 2019, just a couple of weeks ago. It appeared in the Foreign Policy magazine. This is a very prestigious globalist, global elite magazine. And this article was titled, Who Will Save the Amazon and How? And there's a scenario given in the first paragraph that's worth hearing. It's a little frightening, but remember, this is a globalist publication at the top of its game, a very important publication. It opens like this, August 5, 2025. In a televised address to the nation, U.S. President Gavin Newsom announced that he had given Brazil a one-week ultimatum to cease destructive deforestation activities in the Amazon rainforest. If Brazil did not comply, the president warned, he would order a naval blockade of Brazilian ports and airstrikes against critical Brazilian infrastructure. The president's decision came in the aftermath of a new United Nations report cataloging the catastrophic global effects of continued rainforest destruction, which warned of a critical tipping point that, if reached, could trigger a rapid acceleration of global warming. Although China has stated that it would veto any UN Security Council resolution authorizing the use of force against Brazil, the president said that a large coalition of concerned states was prepared to support U.S. action. At the same time, Newsom said the United States and other countries are willing to negotiate a compensation package to mitigate the cost for Brazil for protecting the rainforest, but only if it first ceased its current efforts to accelerate development. Close quote. The above scenario is obviously far-fetched, says Foreign Policy magazine. At least I think it is, he says. But how far would you go to prevent irreversible environmental damage? In particular, do states have the right or even the obligation to intervene in a foreign country in order to prevent it from causing irreversible and possibly catastrophic harm to the environment? Well, the article goes on and makes the case, but the global elite here is speaking out, posing Gavin Newsom as the future president of the United States is a frightful thought in itself. But we do know that Gavin Newsom, the current governor of California, has great ambitions to climb the political ladder. So maybe this is a hint, maybe this is a trial balloon that Gavin Newsom is going to run for president in years to come. Well, the whole story of the Amazon rainforest is just as phony as a $3 bill. And it doesn't mean that the fires are not real, and it doesn't mean that vegetation is not getting destroyed. It is. And fires are always a difficult situation, especially for the people who live close to or in fires and lose property and so on. We can't ever say that fires are just a wonderful thing, but it's part of nature. And fires happen. Fires happen in California that seemingly just ravaged the state. In Northern California and Southern California alike have had devastating wildfires that destroyed property, killed people, created smoke and haze that lasted for weeks, and the rebuilding process is still underway in those populated areas. So fires happen. It's a natural part of the order of things on planet Earth. And the idea that the rainforest is not replenishable is absolute nonsense. Plants regrow. Of course they do. Trees regrow. When will the environmentalists ever get this through their head? The cutting down a tree does not mean that no tree can ever live there again. Plant another tree. Wait 20 years, and you got another big tree. Cut that one down too. Harvest it, make timber out of it, and plant another tree. This is just a simple principle of farming. Things grow on planet Earth. Even in the rainforest, where forest fires have damaged large parts of the forest, they regrow. Well, the United Nations and all of the environmental mob that's trying to intimidate nations of the world, and now especially Brazil, the one thing that they absolutely hate is anybody that stands up and says, we're not having communism here, we're not having Marxism here, we're not having any left wing or other wing or sustainable development wing of the United Nations here either. It drives them mad. And that's the biggest reason I think that Brazil is under attack and that its anti-communist president is under attack. We'll see more as time goes by. But don't buy the rhetoric. This is technocracy working its way out in the form of sustainable development to gain control of resources in the world, to take them out of private hands and out of national hands, and put them into a global common trust for the supposed common good. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.